In advance of the 2022 legislative session in Albany, Prevent Child Abuse New York, the lone statewide nonprofit dedicated to preventing child abuse and neglect, is sharing its vision for how the state can dramatically reduce child abuse. To discuss their plans for the future and the state's role in achieving this vision, we're joined by the group's executive director, Tim Hathaway. Welcome to the show, Tim, and great to see you in person in our studio.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
So for starters, what do we know about the prevalence of child abuse in New York?
In the state, on average, per year, there are about 165,000 children who are part of an indicated case of child abuse. That means there's enough evidence to see that something actually has occurred in the experience of that child. That is wildly underreported. When we look at the actual number of reports across the state, we're talking about at least double that number, so upwards of 300,000. And what that means is that there are a lot of children every year, if you think about 300,000 kids that are impacted by this annually, and then compound that over time, take a slice of 18 kids, 0 to 18, and every year 300,000. So there's a lot of kids out there that have been touched by this phenomenon. And when we think about some prevalence numbers, a lot of times we look at cases per thousand. And so a low number, for instance, would be perhaps 20 kids per thousand that are touched, and a high number might be 50 kids that are touched by child abuse. And our counties across New York State really vary. So we have some counties that are sitting in around that 25 percentile range, and then we have counties that are over 50. And so part of this work, when we think about child abuse prevention, is thinking about, where do we have low rates, what's happening in those communities that makes a difference, and then where have we got some really high rates, and then what's different? How do we begin to tackle that? And thinking through some of those kind of things helps us arrive at some policy solutions that really make sense across the state.
And when we talk about child abuse, what are the different forms that it can take?
There really are a set of standard abuse groupings. The first, of course, would be related to neglect. And we talk about neglect because a lot of times people don't realize that neglect accounts for the vast majority of child abuse reports in the state. So, when we think about that number, 165,000, most of those reports will have neglect also indicated. So that means that it is something that is very, very significant in the lives of children. The research that's been done around neglect says that in some ways it is actually more damaging to children's development. And the reason for that is that because neglect tends to be a long-term problem that really kind of chews away at the core strength of a child. If we think about, a lack of food or a lack of attention or a lack of educational resources, neglect really has a way of undermining development, makes it that much harder for kids to catch up and recover, even if they're resilient kids. So that's one category. The next is really around physical abuse, and this may be something that people are a little more familiar with in the sense that, it's visible. We can see the marks. We can see a child who's has bruising or has, suffered some sort of an injury because of an action that someone took. That obviously is something that is important. It's not as highly reported, obviously, as neglect, for instance, and probably not as highly prevalent as things like sexual abuse, which is the next type. Sexual abuse, of course, is what's happening when an adult or sometimes even an older child, and we're seeing more and more of that older children have been exposed to something and then they're acting on a younger child. But when they're crossing those boundaries around touching another child, engaging in sexual acts. A lot of times what people don't know is that it doesn't have to be physical touching, that the acts of exposing a child to pornography, for instance, or creating some visuals for children, pictures related to, children and sexual acts, all of those are also considered sexual abuse. And then the last category we always talk about is emotional abuse, and we think about that as, maybe that parent who's calling their child, hey, you're stupid, you're dumb, not providing the sort of emotional support that we expect from adults for children. So those are the four primary types that we talk about a lot. And again, all of them are crazy impactful for kids. But we know that there are solutions around those too that we can help families do better.
pivoting to the future, what do you see as your organization, Prevent Child Abuse New York, what do you see as your role moving forward, and how are you looking to, I guess, expand or change the scope of the work you're doing in New York right now as you try to pursue a future of preventing child abuse?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we are really a technical assistance and training organization. That's our roots. For 40-odd years now, we've been involved in working with community partners to really strengthen their box of tools around prevention. And we also do a lot of policy work and helping legislators, helping local electeds think through, okay, what can we do? What are the real steps here? We have outlined for the coming years what we hope is a pretty aggressive approach. We think we can take a bigger bite out of child maltreatment, and we know that there are some specific approaches that have proven to have a real result. So we're focusing over the next several years here on the issues of early childhood home visiting. And so for a lot of folks, they're like, huh, what is that about? But early childhood home visiting is a voluntary service for families. It is happening currently across the state in a number of different places. It's catching families when they're young and when things are going well. Too many times we end up catching people when things have started to fall apart. And we know from a policy perspective, that's the worst thing mm-hmm. because it costs us more at that point. So we can put in place some simple programs early in a family's life and get to them. One of the things that we're pursuing is universal home visiting. So we want every woman who is pregnant to receive prenatal care. Why? Because we know that that saves radically on health costs. So that if that woman can see a physician early in pregnancy and consistently, it's going to reduce the risk for that woman who's giving birth. Universal home visiting acts the same way. We know that families who have access to that are going to have lower usage of things like emergency care. They'll avoid some of those very expensive health services. We know that kids are going to have some better results in terms of health outcomes long term. We know that families are going to reduce the amount of stress that they have. And so when we talk about child abuse, one of the things that happens a lot of times is people often talk about child abuse is you know, that's a family that, you know, just is all screwed up. But the reality is that most child abuse happens because families are overtaxed, they're overburdened, they're too stressed. And part of the solution around prevention is to lower stress. When we think about programs like universal home visiting, what we're doing is getting to families before their stress threshold is too high and before something bad happens. We're also able to help identify families who really need some services before they get into trouble early in that child's life.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Tim Hathaway, the Executive Director of Prevent Child Abuse New York. In order to take on this much more expansive outreach that you're envisioning, does that simply require additional state resources, or should we be looking to other sources of funding for this type of initiative, like local governments or the federal government?
Absolutely. Prevention is always a community-based activity. Communities have to step up and step in to address the issues that they have. So thinking about applying a solution like universal home visiting, we really do need resources from the state. That's an important piece. Certainly the feds can contribute. We also know that communities have a real stake in that. And so having communities be ready to invest as well is a critical piece of that. And I do think that there's a place for the private sector. So for instance, you know, on universal home visiting, health insurance providers have a real role to play there. And we've actually seen some success, like Rochester, for instance, right now has some limited universal home visiting. Healthcare providers came to the table and they said, hey, this is going to save us money, so let's invest here. And looking at it from that model of the state's just not going to fix this, but if we have a lot of partners come around the table and make some commitments to it, we can do it.
Are there any privacy issues raised with this sort of universal visit model? I mean, if I'm a parent, should I just expect that someone's going to come knocking at my door sometime under this model, even if there are no issues? And if that is what's happening, can I say, you know, beat it, you're not coming in, I'm not, you know, you're not talking to me and my kid?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons the program works so well. It is voluntary, and every family has a right to decline services if they choose to. What we know from these programs operating all around the United States, but all around the world really, is that most families really welcome that visit. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's if you've had a baby and come home from the hospital, most people are feeling overwhelmed in that moment, and the home visiting programs approach families from a relational standpoint and really come at that as we understand the sort of struggles you're going through, and here's some things that can be helpful. And they come at it from, this is your agenda as a parent. We're not going to tell you what you have to do. Here's an array of things that may be helpful. So again, most families are ready and willing for a little extra bit of help at that point.
And if resources are committed to implementing the vision that Prevent Child Abuse New York has, what are realistic expectations for the decrease in prevalence of child abuse in New York moving forward?
Yeah, I'll go back to that that percentile per thousand. So if we look at the number of kids per thousand, a number of other prevention strategies, we haven't talked about family resource centers, but we've been able to track a reduction in the rate per thousand of child abuse cases. And so that's one of the first places I think that we look is, as we implement some of these, looking at a county that was sitting at 39 per thousand, we can begin to see those numbers inch down. And like I say, other prevention programs have used that same marker to good effect, family resources centers, for instance. So they were able actually to see some of those numbers begin to tick down. We're not going to stop all child abuse from happening. The reality is that there are some bad actors out there. There are some people who, for whatever reason, are going to harm children. That is not the majority of people. Most people who have found themselves in that place are there because of circumstances in life. If it's issues related to their own ability to cope, or it's issues related to sometimes substance abuse or mental health issues, chronic pain. There are a whole host of things that come into that. Those are preventable things. So can we get to zero? I want to see us at zero. I don't know if we'll totally make it, but we're going to get as close as we can.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Tim Hathaway. He is the executive director of Prevent Child Abuse New York. Tim, if anyone is interested in finding out more resources, where should they go?
Our website is preventchildabuseny.org. That is a great place to start. You'll find an option there to send us some mail if you'd like to, and we're happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, thank you so much for making the time, and good luck with the work moving forward.
Thank you so much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.